Kia ora, I'm Madison Reedy. Welcome to Life in the Fast Lane. New Zealand businesses are a resilient bunch. They've weathered numerous crises, the GFC, earthquakes, and now COVID-19. For the past 20 years, the Deloitte Fast 50 has championed those business owners who've not only survived, but thrived, honouring businesses that have achieved often unbelievable annual revenue growth. So what's their secret to success? In this podcast, I'll be asking some of the country's most notable entrepreneurs how they did it and what to do when the going gets tough. This is Life in the Fast Lane. They're the power couple behind My Food Bag. Husband and wife duo Cecilia and James Robinson co-founded the company of convenience that achieved annual turnover of $100 million over 3 years, seeing them take out the title of the Deloitte Fast 50 Rising Star winner in 2014. That wasn't their first venture, though. They also started Au-Pair Link, a company connecting nannies with families all over the world. And it seems they still have more gas in the tank. They're now looking to disrupt the healthcare market with an app called Tend. Welcome to you both to Life in the Fast Lane. Should we start with an easy question then? How did you achieve creating a multi-million dollar empire in just a few years?
Well, wow, that sounds pretty overwhelming when you put it like that. But look, we really just started with a question. So I think a lot of businesses, you just start with a question. And our question was, what are we having for dinner tonight with My Food Bag? And that's really where we began.
And I think the reality is the journey didn't just take 3 years for us. It started much sooner and much earlier with our venture around Au-Pair Link and working together for many years before we got to My Food Bag. So it's those lessons on the path.
And Au-Pair Link had 419% revenue growth in 2012. And then you backed it up with another year of 176% growth. Do you strive for that level of growth or does it just come by chance?
No, there's nothing to do with chance when it comes down to growth. I mean, you have to design it, right? And James and I, we've always been really focused on, you know, achievement and had really set really clear objectives. And that's really, you know, I think that's how you truly achieve growth.
And what have you got out of your involvement with the Fast 50 Index with Deloitte over the past few years?
Well, I think it's been a great opportunity to connect with other like-minded entrepreneurs. So that's been a rewarding part of the process. And look, you know, we always look at the awards as an opportunity to get further exposure to help our business grow even faster. So really, it's not about the individual. It's about putting the business up in lights and helping get more profile and hopefully eventually more customers for those companies as well.
Let's keep talking about growth because this is why we're here. Is there such a thing as growing too fast?
Well, look, I mean, I think My Food Bag went from zero to 100 million in revenue over the space of 2.5 years run rate revenue. So that means that we literally started out with zero on day one. And by the second year that we were in business and closing out our third financial year, we were going to be close to $100 million revenue. So that was insane. I mean, look, and you really do have growth pains at that level as well. So you have to be really aware of what your strengths and what your weaknesses are. You have to be really focused on achieving the right outcome. You have to be laser clear on who you're really doing this all for, and it's a customer, right? So the customer has to be at the heart of everything. And so, look, it was challenging, but there's nothing quite like a fun challenge to actually really keep you motivated and get your juices flowing. So, yeah, no, it was awesome.
What were some of the growth pains that you both felt throughout that?
Well, at times it sort of feels like, you know, hurtling down a motorway and changing the wheels on the car as you're going, but you have to have a great team to support you. So it's not something that you do all by yourself. And when you look at the scale of some companies like Facebook and Amazon globally, and you look at the logistics behind scaling a company across many, many countries, you need a great team. You need to give people trust and responsibility to execute on a vision. You can't do it all yourself. And that's just critical to your success.
How do you know what speed is right? Is there a telltale sign that tells you that you're growing out of control?
Well, look, I mean, you can look at the weekly and monthly numbers and you can tell that you're growing at an exceptional speed. But you do have to have the foresight to be able to go, well, is this just a trend and how long is it going to go for? And so for us, we were really focused on that. And we also invested ahead of the curve many times where we needed to. And sometimes we invested after the curve had already happened. So there are times where, you know, your team has to work harder and longer and faster than what you've ever worked before. before you're able to take that next growth step up. But there are also times where you have to go, well, look, we need a new warehouse because simply with the growth in my food bag, we just couldn't keep going in the same way that we were previously. So you're constantly just having your finger on the pulse and understanding what's happening both at a business and a customer level really, you know, helps to keep you honest and know where to focus your energy.
And if you put customers at the heart of those decisions, then you know that if you don't have the right structure and the right operational process in play, then ultimately you're going to have a poor customer experience. So building that foundation and those processes is really important to actually execute on what you're selling to customers. And if you don't, customers will tell you about it because it'll be a poor experience.
How often do you check in with your customers? Because when you're so focused on growing at that sort of crazy rate, what should your contact with your customers look like? Daily?
Religiously, yeah, religiously.
And I mean, in my food bag, I literally sat on the receiving end on every single email that we got for the first 18 months, and I would look every single Sunday on our delivery channel. So I'd be right across Facebook and Instagram because I believed that if I started hearing noises, there was something going wrong. And so we were constantly across it. James and I love having our finger on the pulse, so knowing what's going on, and that was just our philosophy, you know.
Was that quite confronting at times, having that sort of connection with your customers? I take it they may have been brutally honest sometimes.
Yeah, sure. You've got to have a thick skin, and that's, you know, part and parcel of being an entrepreneur, a business leader. And I think our first company, our childcare business, was a great educational exercise in that because you're dealing with childcare in people's homes, and that is hyper personal. And so that taught us many lessons in resilience, and we were able to carry that through into my food bag.
I can tell you it's a lot easier to resolve, you know, a missing avocado from a delivery than someone that has a major issue with their childcare arrangement or, you know, something that's happened. So, you know, you have to keep things in perspective as well, and you have to be able to relate to the customers that you're dealing with and the frustrations that they're having. So, but yeah, no, it's not always fun. And as, you know, James said, you've got to have a really thick skin.
With the benefit of hindsight, was there ever a poor decision that either of you or together you made when you were in that massive growth mode?
Oh, I mean, you make lots of poor decisions, and that's how you learn. But you have to, fail fast, sure, but fix fast. You know, a lot of business people talk about failure, but you don't set out to fail. You set out to win, but you fail along the way. The important thing is that when you do fail, when you make a mistake, you fix it. Quick, you learn from it, you move on, and you're on to the next thing. And there's no point sitting there flogging a dead horse. If something really isn't working, you need to duck, weave, dive. And that's what the best entrepreneurs, the best business people do. They roll with the punches.
How do you know which problems are a failure and that you do need to just cut your losses and run?
Well, I mean, I think, again, you have to look at performance. You have to really understand what performance metrics that you're going for. And there were products that we launched that didn't work well. And James and I would look at each other and go, well, we're not doing that same way again, or we're doing it differently, or we're culling it out. And there are also things that are performing really well. And sometimes it's just easier to replicate the success that you've had. You know, once we did a classic, you know, we realized that classic three nights, as an example, was going to be something that would be really successful. You know, we had the family bag, and then we did things like diversify completely into bargain box, which I think a lot of people thought was crazy at that point in time because we cannibalized ourselves in our own market, basically, because we could have just kept selling my food bag at a high, you know, value. But for us, it really made sense to move in towards bargain box. So it was a natural decision, you know.
How many times were you called crazy?
Still. Plenty of times.
Still regularly.
Our accountant told us we were crazy, and they stopped being our accountant pretty quickly afterward. You want people that are going to believe in you, and you know, you want to. That's what, you know, being a business leader is about. It's about creating belief in others, about a common journey, a common purpose. And if you've got people around you that don't believe, then don't have those people around you.
People, you know, you've got to surround yourself by people that believe in you, but also keep you honest, right? Mm. So that's really the priority in terms of how you select those people close to you.
Yeah.
How do you know when to ignore people telling you that you might be a bit crazy, or sometimes actually heed that advice?
I think when people are purely looking at things from a financial perspective, you know, again, bargain box was a really good example of that. There was a lot of people that kind of said to us when they looked at our books, you know, like, my food bag's doing so well, why would you ever do something as stupid as cannibalizing yourself? It's a good example. But for us, we were like, well, actually, it makes sense for the customer.
It's a really good question. Ultimately, it comes down to the delivery of how the person provides that feedback. And you can tell the difference between someone that's challenging you to get better or challenging you to think a different way versus someone who just doesn't genuinely believe in the vision and the purpose.
Yeah.
And the people that genuinely don't believe in the vision and the purpose aren't going to be the people, the part of the journey. But those that are saying, hey, you can do this better, or you should do this way, or you need to work harder or think harder, or then absolutely, those are the people that you want around you.
Absolutely, great advice. James, you talk about living the fear, but what does that actually feel like every day?
Well, it helps when you're married to the person you live the fear with. But that's like anything, right? You know, a problem shared is a problem halved. So, you know, that's really, really a wonderful thing about being married to your business partner is that you're, you know, constantly on the same page. You understand, empathize, and you can work together to solve a problem. And look, if you don't happen to be lucky enough to be married to your business partner, then make sure that you've got people in your tent that you can share that with in a really transparent, open and honest way.
Yeah, we've never aspired to be fearless. Like, we've always been embracing of the fear. We still feel the fear. Even launching 10, you know, going in to disrupt healthcare in New Zealand is probably really crazy out of everything that you could do, right? But for us, you know, it's the right thing to do. And you feel the fear, but you do it anyway, right? That's a challenge.
Is there a balance when it comes to fear, or should you literally wake up every day feeling a wee bit terrified?
Well, it's good. It keeps you on edge, you know, and what the fear is changes as you evolve in your business career. When you're, I think young entrepreneurs are fantastic because they have less to lose, but they still have fear. You know, both Cecilia and I have had a really successful business journey, but our fears morph into different things. It becomes reputational. There's nearly an expectation of success. So you have fear, but it keeps you on edge. You know, the butterflies in the stomach make you feel alive, and they make the rewards so much sweeter.
Across your business journeys with Opia Link, My Food Bag, and now Tent, what have you risked with each of those three?
What haven't we risked? I mean, in Opia Link, we had nothing. You know, like, we, in terms of personally, you know, it was really hard to take a salary out of the business. We were constantly pouring any money that we had been able to save back into the business. It was a really, you know, intense journey, and like, it was amazing, but it was really intense because we had to keep investing into the business and we had to put our money where our mouth was. And the same with My Food Bag, there's no guarantee of success, you know. And when we had My Food Bag, when we started out, we, you know, we had a newborn baby, you know, we hadn't bought ourselves a house, so we didn't actually have a lot of these things. And so, you know, you're constantly making compromises and sacrifices to be able to keep investing in the journey.
And we risked everything. You risked everything was on the line. So, you know, and that's what drives you forward harder, because failure isn't an option.
Do entrepreneurs need to be prepared to risk everything, to put everything on the line?
I think so. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. That's why entrepreneurship often benefits younger people, because, you know, when we started out, we didn't have that much. You know, we had each other and that was fine. We didn't need anything else. And so we didn't have a house or a mortgage or a car or anything expensive really that someone could take away from us. So, you know, we were prepared to be able to really make a fist of it and work hard to try to get ahead, you know.
Was there ever something that you were both never willing to risk?
Each other, probably, more than anything. Yeah, our relationship.
Yeah, there's only so many pots you can have on the stove. And so for us, we would prioritize family and business. And that meant that a lot of friendships we had went by the wayside because we just didn't have time in our lives. So, you know, that was definitely a sacrifice that we made as fostering friendships outside of our relationship. So yeah, it's, you have to be prepared to sacrifice to win.
Let's talk about the inevitable, money. How does one not let money drive their decision-making when it is so clearly a necessity when you're growing a business?
I think it's funny because in Opia Link, we never even contemplated taking out into external capital. And like, so many young entrepreneurs spend half of their life just raising money for the business that still is, you know, in startup phase or hasn't even got off the ground. And I think that's a real mistake for many of them, because you're not actually building something of value until you've got a product that a customer is trying out, you know. And so with Opia Link, we never focused on that. We just focused on making Opia Link as good as can be. With My Food Bag, it was a bit different because we needed the equity to be able to start the business. And I think it's pretty well known that the founders in My Food Bag put in about, you know, $250,000 to build a $100 million business. And that was it. And that was pretty incredible. Tend, on the other hand, is a whole different kettle of fish, right?
Do you want to go into how you're financing that and capital raising for that? Or?
Unfortunately, we've got ourselves into a position where, you know, we've been very successful and we're able to do that personally. But look, you know, I think that the key to, if you focus too much on your personal money, you're thinking about your objectives, personal objectives, rather than what are the objectives of the business. So you need to treat a business like its own living, breathing entity. And it's about what's in the best interest of the business, not what's in your best interest, because there's many things that's not in your best interest in being an entrepreneur. It's what is best for the business. And if you make every decision correctly there, eventually that will lead on to personal benefit irrespective.
What lessons have you learned from capital raisings over the years?
I think that the key thing is that too many people are capitalized too early when they don't have enough to be able to capitalize for. And so, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs give away a lot for very little in the early days. And so that doesn't keep you motivated. You know, you have to have enough to continue to motivate you to get out of bed and to actually make it something that's really real. You know, for us, we've been really good at making shit happen on the smell of an oily rag. So, like, you know, even inside my food bag, we didn't have that much money. Like, remember the fact that it was $250,000, but we needed staff, a warehousing, packaging, you know, all of these things to be put in place, and a marketing campaign and a PR campaign on top of that. And so there are so many people that you give $1 million, $2 million, $3 million to, but nothing really happens from it. So those are the lessons that you have to learn.
But I think lots of people look at getting equity in as you know, they look at the monetary upside, but they don't look at some of the risks and some of the downsides. And
what are those risks?
Well, if you don't execute and you're bringing money into the business, you're not just losing your money or your reputation, you're losing other people's money. And depending on who those people are, if they're influential or powerful people, then that's not really a great position to put yourself in to lose other people's money. And that's a real responsibility. And I think, you know, you have to take that very, very seriously. I think also when you're running a startup, you have to learn how to optimize your investment. You have to learn where are the best places to put cash. And, you know, we've worked for half our business careers for free. We're still working for free for 10. We don't pay ourselves a salary in 10. We didn't pay ourselves a salary for many years in My Food Bag. We didn't pay ourselves a salary for many years in OPLink. So you need to understand, actually, is it best to go in my back pocket as a salary, or is it best to go towards marketing or building the business or employing a salesperson, or, you know, what are the areas that are going to help the business grow?
Yeah, and there's good money and bad money. There is generally good.
Good money is,
you know, the people that you work alongside match that good money. So, you know, Teresa Gatting has been a cornerstone investor in My Food Bag and Tend now as well. You know, and Carlos and Nadia, obviously in My Food Bag, put in money. And so as founders, we're really proud of the fact that we've stuck together. Most founder groups break apart. There is five of us. And we're still best friends. I mean, we didn't start out as best friends, but we are now. And so we love each other. We're kind of like family more than anything else. And so that's good money. But there's also bad money where, you know, you bring on an investor that you don't get along with, or someone that doesn't share your values or your vision and all of those things. It always ends in tears categorically, and it happens frequently.
So what questions should you ask before you ask someone for their money to know that they're bad money?
Well, the most important thing is just what do you need the money for in the first instance, and is it going to help be the best thing for the business? So, you know, I think a lot of people ask for money without having a clear objective of what they're going to spend that money on and why that's the right strategy. And I think sometimes, therefore, people raise before they actually really need to. So that's the most important thing to get clarity on. And then at a value level, you need to ensure that your values and the values of the organization that you've built align with whoever you bring into the organization, employees, investors, everyone.
You have to have a pathway to return on that investment. You know, again, this categoric, like, just raising and raising and raising and raising for what, for when, like, you know, what's the outcome, what's the goal here? And so you can't just get stuck in this raising rhythm where you're constantly just asking for more money from different parties. It just doesn't work.
A shareholder will be thinking, okay, I'm putting this amount of money in 5 years' time, I might get 10x return or 5x return. You need to be thinking, as the entrepreneur, how am I going to get 5x, 10x return for the investor?
Happens if you don't, I guess.
And what happens if you don't, yeah.
Let's talk about challenges, because, you know, with crisis at the moment, you know, COVID-19 is one that's very prevalent. But looking back, what is the biggest challenge or crisis that you've faced in any of your business ventures?
I mean, I think it's hard to look at a singular, you know, moment. I think we've had more personal crises than business crises, you know. And any business crisis that we've had has made us stronger. We had a funding error inside OPLink that was really difficult to deal with at that point in time, which meant that we had to pay back a large amount of money to the Ministry of Education, which we actually, you know, had paid out in rebates to our customers because we thought that that was the way the funding worked. And so, but you work through those issues and you learn from them and you come out stronger. I mean, I think early on, James and I learned a lot of, you know, lessons around transparency and good governance. And so when we had an issue, we were really upfront about it to the people that we needed to be with. And I think a lot of the time, you know, people kind of gloss over or they don't think it's that bad. But I think we've been quite good at just looking at it and going, no, actually, this is a problem and how do we resolve it? But fundamentally, in terms of business, the challenges that we've had have always just, it's always just made us stronger. It's made the business stronger as well.
Is that the mindset to approach them with, that actually this is going to be a lesson learned down the line?
Absolutely. You know, you have to, people that, you know, dwell on problems to the extent that they start to wallowing in their own self-pity are not designed to be entrepreneurs. You just have to be solely focused on the solution. Cecilia's got a great saying. I can't own this. I'm going to attribute it to her.
Well, it's actually not my saying either, but, you know, leaders think and talk about solutions. Followers think and talk about problems. So, like, it's such a good benchmark in terms of if you're looking at talent of your team and you want to elevate someone into a leadership role, look for the people who are constantly thinking about solutions, you know, because if you're constantly thinking about the problem, then you're not able to lift yourself out of that. And so yeah, I mean, that's the lessons that we've learned along the way.
So we've never really seen a crisis as defining, but it's certainly just helped, shape us in terms of, you know, driving our businesses forward and looking for solutions.
And that doesn't mean that we haven't had massive big, you know, issues with our businesses, because we have, but I feel like the times that we've had them, we've been able to deal with them.
Just a few chinks in the armor, right?
Yeah.
COVID-19 has exacerbated this need for convenience and home delivery. I'm imagining that that's really upped the competition for a business like MyFoodBag. So how do you deal with someone, and excuse the pun here, trying to cut your lunch?
Well, I actually think that MyFoodBag and anyone that's got an online retail channel right now is doing incredibly well, because we've just seen an acceleration of what we already knew, was that people are going to buy more things, you know, online. You know, you look 10 years ago, you know, the uptake of, you know, booking travel, which is a bad comparison now because clearly it's changed, but travel, you know, moved like 50% online while food was in the, you know, single digits. And so I think the fact that we're truly now seeing the efficiencies and the benefits of actually being able to run an economy through purchasing online is really at the forefront. And if you haven't yet invested in a platform that will make your business, if you can, deliver a service digitally, then you should be, you know.
I think if you're already in a position where you have an established brand and e-commerce business, you're only going to benefit. So, you know, the US retail spending in 2018 was about 13% in terms of online. And in 2 years' time, in 2022, it's forecasted to be a quarter. So that's the entire US retail economy. And you think of the, you know, the trillions of dollars, you know, in that economy. That is a massive change, about a 12% uplift in 4 years. That is going to have a material impact for any business that operates in an e-commerce space.
Is brand then the best way to combat competition?
Yeah, look, I think so. I mean, for us, we've always spent, and I say this, but it's so true, like we don't spend a huge amount of time looking in the rear view mirror, because while they're looking at you going, oh, look at what amazing thing you've done, then you're already innovating and focusing on the next big thing. So for me, it's kind of like swatting flies away. We've always been really clear about the fact that what MyFoodBag needs to achieve and when, as an example. I mean, clearly we're still directors inside MyFoodBag as well. And for 10, similarly, you know, we're really focused on doing the best thing by our customer, you know, and focusing on delivering the best healthcare experiences, because New Zealand deserves that. And so for us, we look at it and our lens, you know, for example, with 10 right now, is that we don't believe that our children and our community and the wider whānau of New Zealand deserve to inherit our healthcare system. And so for us, I'm not worried about someone else trying to do what we're doing. I'm worried about making sure that my children, your children, the children of our future, they all get the best healthcare experiences, you know? That's what we're focused on.
Let's keep talking about Tend, this starting something new, attempting to disrupt a massive, massive market in this country and possibly even internationally. How do you approach that?
I think you just approach it based on what customers want, but also, you know, sometimes customers, when you're operating at the edge of the curve, don't necessarily know what they can have. So it requires a balance, I think, between laser focus on the customer and solving their problems, but also there's a degree of visionary, actually, this is where we think we should be going, and this is what, as Cecilia said, can deliver the best outcomes.
Yeah, it's about reimagining things. And you know, from us, we it's really about assembling the right people, right? When we started out looking at Tend, we avoided it for quite a long time because we're like, this is bigger than Ben-Hur. And then we kind of circle back and we're like, no, we're going to have to do this because no one else is going to do it. So who's going to do it? Well, we're going to have to do it. Damn it. And then basically, you know, 18 months ago, we were looking at it and we said, okay, well, if we're going to do this, who are the best people in the industry to actually be able to do this alongside us? You know, who are the best people that are really going to transform the sector? So you have to start with the people and go, okay, and where do we go from here? And that's building the product that we believe is going to be transformative. And that's really exciting.
What are the challenges that come with that, though?
It's a laundry list of challenges. I mean, look, when you're dealing with, you know, health, you know, you've got a lot more bureaucracy than what you have than when you're dealing with food. And so you have to be really understanding of, you know, the fact for us, it's been, we think that innovating from the outside in is much better than from the inside out, you know. And so, but you still have to get those stakeholders on board. You still have to explain to people what you do, and that's really important.
Wonderful. Well, hey, thank you so much for both coming in and jumping on our Life in the Fast Lane podcast. I've certainly learned a lot, especially about not just failing fast, but also wanting to fix fast. And I also giggled at Cecilia's swatting away the flies in terms of competition. Now, to finish off, could you please both finish off this sentence for me? And I'll start with you, Cecilia, and then come to James. For your business to survive and thrive, you need...
to focus on the customer.
For your business to survive and thrive, James, you need...
sheer determination.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you so much. That is Cecilia and James Robinson, co-founders of Opia Link, My Food Bag, and now Tend. Thank you for listening to Life in the Fast Lane, brought to you by the Deloitte Fast 50, championing New Zealand businesses for the past 20 years.